If you're in the market for a super addictive puzzle game, you have to check out Mini Motorways on Apple Arcade. It's a city planning strategy puzzler with an incredibly satisfying gameplay loop. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. New subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.
This episode of Pixel Civ is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/pixelciv. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Hello, and thank you for joining us on episode 62 of Pixel Civ. We're here without Johnny this week, but Scott is still with me, along with James on the switches.
Hey,
Scott.
Hey.
So joining us as well is Yosha Nushiwan, the man behind Inflatality. Thanks for joining us, Yosha.
No problems. Glad to be here.
All right, what else are we checking out today, Scott?
Today, Mitch, we'll be taking a look at the recent cancellation of ABC's Good Game. Definite sad news for the Australian gaming community.
Excellent. But first, let's take a look at the different style changes that games go through as a franchise moves along.
You're listening to Pixel Sift. Or you might be watching Pixel Sift on Twitch. Pixel Sift.
So with so many games now sporting many sequels, developers are now under pretty high pressure to bring something new to the table with each new version. In some cases, art style, gameplay mechanics, or even story tone can be altered to bring about noticeable differences. So I guess one of the things that I noticed recently was the latest Final Fantasy. That was like significantly different to the generations before it. Like it's moved from turn-based combat to like a very action-y and a very skill-based system.
Yeah, I mean, that's more game mechanics than art style, mm-hmm. though, to be fair.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Final Fantasy series has always stuck to that pretty strong kind of anime flavor, which is, you know, still quite strong in their artwork. But obviously, yeah, the new iteration's quite different in a lot of elements.
Like things like Halo and like from Halo 2 to Halo 3, it was almost like Halo 3 had lighting in it. Halo 2 didn't.
It's just a, I don't know, it's to give people something new. Like, you have your dedicated fan base who will always want, like, maybe, not necessarily, but sometimes they'll want very much the same thing. But you sometimes do need to inject something different to bring in new audiences, as well as keep your invested audiences interested.
Yeah.
Like, when the Halo series, one of the greatest criticisms of it is it looks like the previous game, and I don't really see that, because in the sense that Halo 4 should look exactly like Halo 1, but it doesn't. It looks almost entirely different, for better or for worse.
I think one of the more extreme examples of that is probably Battlefield 3 and Battlefield 4. There's very little discernible difference between the two. Like, from even after playing it for a while, there's subtle differences and slight changes, but wasn't enough for me anyway to warrant like a separate release.
Absolutely, especially when you got the like the second assault upgrade for Battlefield 4, and you basically had Battlefield 3 maps. It was like the same frigging game. It was like, why are we doing this? Why didn't we just get like a map update?
It was same deal with like Call of Duty for a bit, until it kind of weirdly enough realized that it should be different. And that was lazy. When it got interesting again for a bit. Yeah,
I actually played the recent Call of Duty, the Infinite Warfare, last week, and I considered it actually quite the same if you actually play it. Like, you end up hiding behind a crate, shooting out of cover, and that's about it. There is a nice little space battle, like space starship battle, which is pretty fun, that mechanic.
Yeah, apparently it changes, because they have like multiple studios on the Call of Duty franchise. Like, that's one way that I've seen them give same games sort of different flavor. Although, in the end, some of them end up doing quite similar, but sometimes Treyarch has a very different style as opposed to what's the other guy's
Infinity Ward?
The other developers. Yeah, or whatever the renamed studio was that replaced them or something. Like, still subtle differences, but they still... It's this weird line they have to straddle between keeping it similar enough to your prequels, but making it new enough for it to, like, be a separate game to warrant a release.
Yeah, that's it. Like, I think the Battlefield one was a really good example, because as far as graphically wise, anyway, they haven't changed a whole lot over the last few kind of releases. And the 3 to 4 is ridiculous. There isn't actually a lot going on. But if you throw in ones like Battlefield Hardline or Battlefield 1 even, there is quite a lot of differences there. I think that's where they're kind of flexing their change, and they're kind of continuing with, well, continuity with their other games to exactly that, keep people appeased at what they've learned to love.
I mean, part of this could be attributed to technological advances.
Oh, and it has to be.
As machines have got more powerful and just they become more accessible, graphical changes are, I guess, a given. But I'm more referring to this. This topic was actually inspired by an article on Kotaku. It was by Alex Walker. It was, "Please don't take Ghost Recon Wildlands seriously."
Yeah.
And I think that was a bit brutal title. But I mean, he's saying that it deviates a little bit, deviates pretty significantly from previous Ghost Recon games.
Which I was surprised to read. I haven't played Wildlands, obviously, so he's a much better person to voice opinion on it. But it didn't seem a whole lot different to me from any of the other kind of Clancy games.
I think it was just how it went from to a much more open world than prior. Like, I haven't really kept as up to date with that one as, like, some of the previous games, but it's still got that general feel.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, tactical executions and stuff, but...
And that's why I couldn't understand what he was trying to say in his article, in that there was such a huge difference, because I, like, compared it to, say, like, Future Soldier, where it seemed fairly much the same kind of gameplay and everything seemed the same art style. I didn't understand where this huge difference that he felt was coming from, apart from the fact that, yeah, it's more open world style, but art style-wise, which is what he was really going for.
I like to enjoy, like, looking at the player's reaction to a change in overall feel. One of the most evident that I've seen in the past couple of years is the Forza series. And when they tacked on, well, I guess they didn't tack on, but they released a version of it called Forza Horizon, and that made everybody love it. It seems like the Forza Motorsport series was very much a simulation, racing simulator, yeah, and yeah, a car simulator, but didn't quite grab people that really wanted to just have fun with cars, I guess.
So they took it in a lot more of an arcade direction.
Yeah, they redid the setting entirely. It was that now a festival, and the cars were treated more as toys than anything else. And that
just let people drive and live their fantasies of their cars, like super expensive, crazy cars that they probably won't be able to have anytime soon.
Exactly. And I know people now that have bought Xbox Ones for Forza Horizon, sorry.
I do know of this one game that which had the really reverse effect, or not really, but I don't know if you guys remember a while back the Brothers in Arms games.
Yep.
Like, it was like a tactical shooter and stuff. And then I remember at an E3 or something, they revealed Brothers in Arms Furious 4 or Furious 5 or something. And Brothers in Arms primarily has been a very gritty Band of Brothers World War II, you know, war is hell kind of game. And then they just showed this trailer out of the blue for this very silly Inglorious Bastards card, well, not like cartoon, very stylized shooter or something. And so many fans of Brothers in Arms were just furious about it.
Yeah,
I don't know if that game's happened or is going to happen, but the amount of rage that was coming from the fan base was intense, and I was like, wow, okay.
Is that something you consider as a developer?
Fan appeasement?
I haven't really made many sequels, but in terms of fan appeasement, I guess I don't really have a brand, if you know what I mean. Like, I haven't exactly got an established title anyway, so I don't necessarily have to worry about that. So I have the freedom to, you know, make something very artsy, and then at the same time make something that's just, you know, quick, instant feedback to make you feel good. Like, I can explore the whole spectrum, which is one of the benefits of being like a not hugely established indie.
Yeah. I know you didn't want to talk about tech too much, Mitch, but like technology obviously comes into play. You've got your, you know, the newer art style iterations of games as they go through their evolution. So the older ones like your Marios and your Zeldas and whatever, especially say like Mario 64, which was like a big turn into, you know, an open 3D kind of thing. And I want to put that to you, Osho. Does technology affect the way that you kind of work in the artistic realm? Or do you do things old school?
So with indie, because you don't have that much time, most indies will generally do it, I wouldn't say old school, but we'd be doing, you know, low poly, very simple, or like 2D style, because, I mean, when you're an indie, you have to play to your strengths. So I don't have that much time, I don't have that much money, and we don't exactly have access to the highest tech out there, right? Like, I use Unity a lot, and Unity, although capable of stuff that parallels what AAA is doing, I'm one artist, and I'm usually one or one of two artists on a team. So it's kind of like, no, we're going to get something out fast. And so it's when we start more relying on more unique visuals, more interesting just design, try to play to those strengths instead. And because I'm also lazy, I try to find much more efficient ways to do things, whether it just be limited color palettes because they look nice and they're a lot less taxing in terms of time to do once you get them, or just like low poly 3D modeling, for example.
Excellent. All right, we'll get more about your development process in the next segment. Thanks.
Hey, this is Fabian Malabello, the director of the Otherworld Agency, and you're listening to Pixel Sift.
All right, so as you may have noticed, we have Yosha and Shiwan here to talk about Inflatality. Yosha, thanks for joining us.
No problems. Yeah, so Inflatality, crazy game, right?
Yeah, big fan.
So can you tell us a little bit about your game and how it came to be?
So Inflatality is basically a physics-based derpy fighting game where those wavy inflatable tube men that you see at like car sales, for example, two of them are fighting each other. And that's basically it. You and your friend are basically going up against each other as one of these wavy inflatable men trying to deflate one another. In terms of where the idea came from, though, one of our team members, Rick, who's in charge of a lot of our audio as well as like design, he was driving his kids down one of those highways that has heaps of car yards and car sale yards all over the place, and two of those inflatables were like really close to each other, and his kid was like, oh my goodness, they're fighting. And he's like, yeah they are. And kind of just came from that.
Yes, has the game changed at all since we saw it at PAX AU?
We're currently implementing a few more maps as well as trying to get some more weapons in there. So we have like variety in that sense. And we're hoping to get like a sort of tournament mode at some point later. But we're getting close to finishing it up.
You had it at PAX 16. Did you have it at PAX 2015 as well in the Rising Showcase?
Yeah, we did. That's when it was just one map. So that was like...
Just the car yard.
Just the car yard. We've added a few more, including a sort of like a jousting arena.
Yeah.
Where like you've got knights actually jousting in the background, because that's a logical place for them to be. as well as a... I'm just trying to remember what the other one was. I forget now.
That's cool. So you obviously got a lot of feedback from the first packs, enough to take it on and really improve it to, you know, closer to the stage we've got it at currently. But was it nice to come back with the improved version? Like, was it rewarding and helpful the second time?
The second time, it was just sort of still seeing if there was still engagement for it. And it wasn't so much... It was more like ideas of where people wanted to go or what they were thinking of or what they'd like to see in it. And we tried to take that on board and see what else we could do. And putting that feedback into some new weapons and maps and areas for players to actually just smash each other.
I've noticed, I was reading the press release from it. And it's had said something on there about aiming for an early 2016 release. Assuming you had some delays and difficulties along the way, would that be a right assumption?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. We were meant to change that to this year, so we're hoping to get it released pretty soon this year, because thing is, like, the entire team, we're all working on this in our spare time.
Yeah.
And yeah, most of us work full time.
Oh, that's something.
One
we
of us
appreciate.
Has a family, so it's like, got to cram it into when we can. But we are getting there, getting closer. Hopefully, it should be around. Oh. I'm not so great at time management. But,
yeah, that's okay. Don't lock yourself into anything.
April, maybe.
Neither are we, mate. Don't worry. All right. So you mentioned two studios working on the game. So what's it like, two studios forming, like, I guess, coming together to finish a game?
This is Deep Forge and Hojo for anyone that are, for the listeners out there.
Yeah.
So the it's basically sort of who in each studio was capable of what. So in terms of Hojo, we had Rick on audio, as well as like some design and like particle effects. For some reason, he's all about particle effects. And then we got Yola, who is really good with lots of 2D and UI and graphic design kind of stuff. Then those two from Hojo, then you got Arvin from Deep Forge, who's a programmer. So it was kind of just a compilation of just skills, and then me affiliated with none of them, just came along because I like to do art.
To form a super studio.
Yeah, so it's kind of like just an amalgam of people working together, which is the classic indie story.
Yeah.
So will the studios separate after this project is done, or will you guys continue to work together collaboratively?
If we we'll probably keep working on Infatality if there's more content, if people are craving more content. But yeah, it goes to see if we have any other ideas and we totally work together, or if not, we'll probably go our separate ways. It's very much a project-based thing at the moment.
Yeah. The physics in the game are pretty incredible. What kind of challenges did you have, you know, creating the wacky wave me movements but keeping it realistic? Obviously, you're more of an artistic angle, but that still comes into play as far as I'm concerned, because it looks great and it looks real. They look like wacky waving inflatable tube men.
Thank you. Most of the credit will go to Arvin for that, who's our programmer. But initially, when we were prototyping, etc., we were trying to figure out how best to do it, whether it should be just purely physics and I'll just model the character and rig it with enough joints so that it could bend nicely, or if I should actually maybe implement some, like, actually animate it first and then sort of have physics either take over with it or just work with it, because there are ways that you can sort of have physics enabled with the animation.
Yeah.
So we tried off with animations first, but the problem was is that it was a bit too defined. Because our game isn't like a hardcore brawler. It isn't Street Fighter. And we weren't trying to be that, but when I was implementing animations, it looked a lot like that. It was press a button to do an attack and press another button to do another attack, and it just wasn't feeling right.
Yeah.
Because you're meant to be this, like, wavy, barely in control idiot. So that's when we kind of made the move more to physics-based and then probably ditched animations entirely, because players needed to be able to move dynamically and sway in the wind and all that, and it was just better to do it through physics.
I think you're better for it, actually.
Yeah. It is the most probably PG-rated fighter I'd have ever seen to date. How's the reception been amongst the different age groups of people playing the game?
Little kids go crazy.
Yeah.
They go crazy for it. It's amazing. Like, to be honest, the response is actually kind of similar across the age ranges, because what happened a lot, like, so firstly with kids, also have lots of nieces and nephews that I get to play test the game as well, and they cackle like crazy. It's great. So it's a really good feeling. But then what happens with older tip from teens to adults, etc., it happens a lot specifically at PAX. They'll walk around, then they'll catch a glimpse of Infatality and just go, wait, what? Turn around, then just stop and go, no way. And then they'll turn their friend and be like, guy, you gotta see this, or dude, you have to see this, etc. And it's just, they're floored by this really dumb idea, and then they play it because it's just so that fine line of I have no control and I have some control and I kind of know what I want to do, but I'm trying to do it. It's not working out.
The entertainment grabs you in, but the fantastic execution that both of your studios have done like keeps them there.
Look, I walked past a display multiple times at PAX, and I don't think there was ever a person not with a huge grin on their face in front of your display. Yeah, so
it's just silly.
So if people want to know more about Inflatality and your studio, where can they go?
So we have the website inflatality.com. We also have the hashtag on Twitter, #Inflatality. You can also follow the Hojo Studios Twitter account at Hojo Studios or at DeepForge, or we have our own Twitter account at Inflatality.
Do go and check
at inflatality.com is the best way to go.
Please go check it out.
Check it out. Also noteworthy that we didn't mention is the sound design in the game is fantastic. It's it adds to the whole PG rated fighting thing. Love it. All right, let's jump into the next topic.
Pixel Sift. Pixel Sift. No, seriously, Pixel Sift. No, seriously.
Pixel Sift.
So this week we learned of the unfortunate cancellation of ABC's long-running video program, Good Game. Though it will remain in its other kind of smaller spawn point versions and the likes, the main program aimed at the older and arguably more influential gaming market is sadly gone from our screens. This move by the nation's public broadcaster has left many scratching their heads. In a time where video games are garnering more attention and creating more revenue than ever, we ask why. Why now, Mitch?
Why now? It just seems like...
10 years. 10 years has been on.
10 years.
And through like other host changes. It seems like a strange thing to... Yeah, it's 10 years, I'm pretty sure. You can check me on that.
Yeah, no, I believe you.
it's come out of nowhere. The Good Game kind of Twitter account was still updating like last week saying they're ready for 2017, and all of a sudden their rug's been pulled out.
Honestly, that show was... a lot of the inspiration for us doing this.
Yeah, look, I mean, it wasn't perfect and sometimes it annoyed me, but but it was great. And what it did for, like, what it represented in the Australian gaming community for, like, young and old alike was priceless, I feel.
I remember when, like, we didn't have, like, prior to Good Game, we didn't really have anything, any kind of, like, show on television for games. Like, all you'd ever have was magazines. And this is back when I'm in, like, high school.
Yeah.
And... it was, when it first came on TV, I was like, oh my goodness, this is something I didn't know how much I needed this.
Yeah.
It was nice to just see it on television.
Yeah,
and just have
getting
people
all my stuff from
on
like
TV talking about it. Yeah.
PlayStation magazines or whatever. Yeah, like I said, after 10 years, it seems really weird, especially at this point in the world, I guess. You know, the video games industry is the fastest growing entertainment industry in the world. In Australia in recent years, the industry has generated like $2 billion in revenue, and it obviously continues to grow. But not just the ABC, but everyone seems in Australia on the government side of things seems to be stepping away from the industry.
It did seem like it was the only mainstream media that was taking games seriously to an extent. Like, yeah, everyone else just seemed to be treating them as either A, a problem, B, I guess... another problem, or like patronizing them in the sense that, oh, they're suddenly educational and things like that, and which is true, I guess, to an extent, but it was just seemed like they weren't being treated with that much respect, and that show was the only one that I saw that was doing that
pioneer in Australia. And like, yes, viewing and the way we kind of obtain and view our media is changing, but ABC has kind of done a good job of making sure they do support streaming and the online iView and whatever. Like, I just don't... it seems like a really weird decision. And like I said, about the money as well, like, it's about the industry being taken seriously on that kind of level. You know, the video games industry is expected to grow more than to $120 billion by 2020. Like, it's no wonder... I should say this before I jump into that. Nick Boy and Hex, two of the hosts of the show...
I know you're watching.
they've now come out that they're moving to a new show on Channel 7, like, which for me is huge kind of red lights, because, like, if a commercial station's going to jump into it, there's come some kind of commercial viability of it. And it seems like the ABC have kind of gone a sad backwards call on letting a Good Game fizzle, like, when it... you know.
I think the Channel 7 is like, they'll look up the same numbers you just quoted, Scott. They'll be like, okay, well, there's obviously interest.
Yeah,
there's, can't be ignored.
There's money to be made, but except now that's all going to be, you know, interspersed with terrible, you know, marketing and like, you know, just.
He's hoping it'll they'll let it be what it is.
Hopefully.
Instead of kind of influence it too much. And on the upside, it'll be nice to see after the tennis, like a game show or something. Like
yeah, and I know everyone's got their own opinions on, I guess, Hex and Nick Boy and everyone else in general, but those two were my favorite. I feel like they kind of really improved the show into an all-around proper, you know,
covering. I mean, and Johnny's not here to say this, but he's always mentioned publicly and pretty privately that he thinks that broadcast media is going to go in that direction. That we're just going to have streamed game tournaments and like the ESL, things like that, yeah, on TV.
And that's what I can understand where the ABC is coming from in their decision here, but it just feels a little bit misplaced. And also, I was going through the annual report of the ABC from the Nielsen reports from 2015, and there's nothing but praise basically for not only TV, but Good Game and everything that is around it. Like, this really has come out of nowhere with no proper explanation that like that actually explains why this has happened like this.
I mean, it might be one of those
wasn't
things.
Wasn't that like two hosts or something?
Yeah,
like,
but that's not good enough reason for me, to be fair. When you've got, what, five or six hosts in the whole, like, the whole kind of team, and you've also had people leave before when the team was smaller and that mattered more. Like, that's not a good enough reason, I don't think.
Yeah, look, Johnny's not here and we're still making a show.
Exactly. The show must go on, you know?
Yeah, so, it's just so odd.
What is your feeling of towards Good Game and what it represented? How was the reception for your camp, Yosha?
Good Game was like one of those, for us, it was major sources of exposure for us, you know? Like, yeah. Good Game worked hard to sort of, you know, put some spotlight or shine some spotlight onto some of the indie games that were showing up on there. I mean, Hojo Studios was on there a while ago, showing off their catnips or whatever. They, Nippy Cats, sorry. Catnips is a completely different thing. Wow.
Allegedly.
Oh, but, yeah, it was, they were a good source of exposure for just local Australians, as well as they were part of a reason why a lot of AAA could easily come down to Australia for shows and things, because you could tell them, look, we can give you national coverage, that they'd come down, so like it made like cons coming here easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the real
I never thought of it from that angle.
Yeah, exactly. They stood up for something, and that's what I mean. It's a huge loss to the community, whether you had, you know, indifferent feelings towards the show or not, or if you didn't watch it or whatever. It really did represent something to us. The real tragedy here is the failure of the ABC to capitalize and admit the value of a program such as The Good Game. You know, like, yeah, free to air TV and whatever's declining, but
I think at a whole, it was just confusing for everyone, because out of everyone, we thought that the ABC understood that.
Mm.
But
wait, we've still got really poor internet in Australia, so assuming that we can just completely get away with TV at this stage and you know, give up on shows that have been long running and still have a good viewership is a little bit ridiculous.
I'm getting NBN soon.
Join. Then all the
Johnny back club. Everything.
Yep.
Right.
Anyway, I think that is all we have time for this week. Sadly, we have to go. So, thanks again for joining us on PixelSip. Yosha, do you want to reiterate where we can find more of your work and Inflatality?
Sure. So, yep, inflatality.com is probably the best place to get all your updates. And you can also check out the hashtag Inflatality on Twitter. Twitter seems to be our main source of communication at the moment.
Excellent. And as usual, we're putting all the links up to all this on our website, www.pixelsiv.com.au. Scott, where can people find us on social media?
People, you can find us at facebook.com/pixelsift, twitter.com/pixelsift, twitch.tv/pixelsift, and youtube.com/pixelsiftau.
Excellent. And you can go on our website to stream episodes or subscribe to our podcast on either iTunes, Pocket Cast, or using the RSS link on our page. And while you're on iTunes, if you could give us a review and a star rating, that would be great. It would also help. Thanks. This episode of Pixel Sift was brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/pixelsift. Over 180,000 titles to choose from your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi, made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. At sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only. $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.